House come to order. Members, please register their presence by voting. Any member fail to register their presence, clerk may take the quorum.
Thirty-five present, five absent.
Miller.
Speaker, all Representative Helen Byrne is absent, is excused from the call of the House today. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that other absent members be excused on official state business.
There are no objections, so ordered. Members, please rise for prayer by Reverend John Quinn, Unification Church. Malone. There are no objections, so ordered. Clerk, please certify to the correctness of the previous day's journal.
As Chief Clerk, I certify to the correctness of the journal for the 52nd day in House Supplement Number 4.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the journal be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 51st day and also for House Supplement Number 4.
There are no objections, so ordered. Brings us introduction of guests or the guests to be introduced to the House.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A today, there are a number of high school students with us, some from Haynes and some from Juneau. They're members of a Spanish class, and they're here observing. They visited the Finance Committee meeting this morning. We'll visit with the governor this afternoon. In the gallery, we have from Haynes, Joan Goliford, Molly Manuel, Mike Helm, Ken Coffey, and their teacher, Mrs. Nanny. And also from Juneau, Cindy Kaiser, Sharon Kroll, Diane Swartz, Brad Winton, Charlene Griffin, Ron Eagleson, Norman Flood, Melanie Millay, Carl Tisdale, and the teacher, Mrs. Ethel Nidy.
Mr. Duncan.
Also in Gallery B today, Mr. Speaker, are a couple of Juneau residents and friends, Craig Smith, who's a local attorney, and Mr. Ron Sedgwick is a local pharmacist.
Any other guests for introduction? Clerk, have messages from the governor.
No, Mr.
Clerk, have messages from the other House.
The Senator's passed sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 87, congratulating Loney E. Jansen as he returns herewith. Resolution concerns enrolling. The Senator's passed the following and are transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 83 amended by the Resources Committee, supporting the governor's position for a delay in offshore lease sales for the Gulf of Alaska.
Resources.
Senate concurrent resolution number 86 by all members of the Senate, honoring George Atla for winning his sixth Spur Rendezvous championship.
Rules.
Senate concurrent resolution number 87, honoring Roxy Brooks for her fourth consecutive victory in the Women's World Sled Dog Race.
Rules.
Senate Bill number 552 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, enacting to teachers' retirement and providing for an effective date.
For the Education and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have general communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Report to standing committee.
The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Joint Resolution 52 relating to immigration visas for alien children adopted by American citizens under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by H. Burns, Swanson, Parr, Ostrowski, and Osterbach. House Joint Resolution 52 has no further referral. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Joint Resolution 53 directing the Food and Drug Administration to research the drug lay seal under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by H. Burns, Swanson, Parr, Ostrowski, and Osterbach. House Joint Resolution 53 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Joint Resolution 56 relating to the closure of small post offices under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Parker, M. Byrne, and McKinnon. House Joint Resolution 56 has no further referral. The Committee on Commerce has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 468, an act relating to fire extinguishing systems and providing for an effective date under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 468 with the same title, and that it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Rode, McKinnon, Rudd, Fisher, Wallace, and Kelly, having no recommendation, Urian, and Freeman. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 468 has no further referral. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 509, an act relating to funerals and the practice of mortuary science, with an effective date under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 509 with the same title and that it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Rudd, Kelly, Speaker, and Miriam, having no recommendation, Rode, McKinnon, and Wallace. House Bill 509 has no further referral. The Committee on Commerce has had House Bill 535, requiring disclosure on real estate conveyance under consideration. The members of the committee report it back as individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, signing do pass, Bradley and McKinnon. Signing do not pass, Rode, Fisher, Urian, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Rudd. House Bill 535 has no further referral. The Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is at House Bill 604, relating to the Uniform Land Sales Practices Act, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, O.C. Davis, Rudd, Ostrowski, Kelly, and Freeman. House Bill 604 has a further referral to Judiciary. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 718, providing for the transplanting of wolves to other states, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be passed with a text amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Anderson, Chairman, concurred in by Brown, Huntington, Osterbach, Rode, and Anderson. House Bill 718 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 719, Special Appropriation to the Department of Fish and Game for a Wolf Transfer Program with an effective date, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be passed with a text amendment. The report was signed by Mr. Anderson, Chairman, concurred in by Brown, Huntington, Osterbach, Rode, and Anderson. House Bill 719 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 729, a special appropriation to the Department of Public Works for the Chena River Flood Control Project with an effective date, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee reports it back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Parker, H. Burns, McKinnon, signing D. Cass, Wallace, and Miller. House Bill 729 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 736, special appropriation to the Department of Public Works for pier and float construction with an effective date, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Parker, and McKinnon, having no recommendation, M. Byrne. House Bill 736 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 746, a special appropriation to the Department of Public Works for port facility development in Onalaska with an effective date under consideration. The members of the committee recommend it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concluding by Miller, Parker, and McKinnon, having no recommendation, and Boone. House Bill 746 was a further referral to finance. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 748, providing for the issuance of general obligation bonds in the amount of $4,500,000 for the purpose of paying the cost of the Tena River Flood Control Project with an effective date under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurring by Wallace, Miller, Parker, A. Stern, and McKinnon. House Bill 748 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 784 relating to the Cook Inlet Land Exchange with an effective date under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced. The committee substitute for House Bill 784 with the same title, and it is reported back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurring by Parr, Bradley, Cotton, Brown, and Eliason, signing DuPass, Gardner, and Stephan. House Bill 784 has no further referral. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 833 relating to the abatement of nuisances under consideration. The members of the committee recommend that we replace the committee substitute for House Bill 833 with the same title and that it be reported back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, signing DuPass, Gardner, and Brown, having no recommendation, Cotton, and Stephan. House Bill 833 has no further referral. I have no further family committee reports.
Clerk, have reports to special committee.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have introduction of resolution.
House sent Resolution 57 by the Finance Committee, requesting full congressional funding of Section 107, Rivers and Harbors Act projects, and an increase in the authorized monetary limitation under that act. House sent Resolution Number 58 by the Rules Committee by request, making application to the United States Congress for a convention for proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to provide for the election of federal district judges.
The district.
I have no further resolution for introduction.
Clerk, have House Bill 751.
House Bill 851 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the quasi-judicial regulatory agencies in state government and providing for an effective date.
Commerce and Judiciary.
House Bill 852 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the Alaska Transportation Commission.
Commerce and Judiciary.
I have no further bills for introduction.
Please, see the daily calendar. Mr. Miller.
Without
objection, the House meeting. House come to order. Will the clerk read the first item on the calendar?
House Bill Number 522 by Parker, Bradley, Gardner, Malone, Miller, and Sullivan, an act relating to the regulation of lobbying and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 522 under consideration. The members of the committee recommend it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 522 and further reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, signing DuPass, Parker, McKinnon, and Miller. Signing do not pass, Fisher and M. Byrne. Having no recommendation, Wallace and H. Byrne. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 522 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 522 Judiciary with the same title and that it be passed. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concluding by Gardner, Cotton, Brown, Bradley, Stecken, Eliason, and Parr. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that Judiciary Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of House Bill 522.
Okay, no objection. The Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted. First, an amendment. Will the clerk read the first amendment? Mr. Anderson. House will stand in order. House come to order. Would the clerk read the first amendment?
Amendment number one by Mr. Brown. It's quite long and it's been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of amendment number one.
Objections noted, Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Amendment Number 1 essentially eliminates what I think is unnecessary paperwork. Under the bill as it stands now, if a lobbyist were to spend, say, $82 or $91 or something, entertaining and in his attempts to influence a public official in the administration or a commission in Anchorage or Fairbanks or a legislator, and he filed his report, it wouldn't show up. It would just show up as a zero until he reaches that trigger of $100. If he has nothing to report, I don't think there's any reason to require him to report. Now, we've already, in the Judiciary Committee, adopted this kind of a policy with respect to those filings that are required of public officials on page 9, subsection B, beginning at line 22, for the public official's filing. I think the same kind of theory ought to apply to lobbyists. Remember now that under this bill, the lobbyist is no longer just someone who is affecting legislative action. The State Affairs Committee expanded the bill to involve the effect upon administrative action. So we've taken into the bill quite a few more people than are affected by present law or by the original bill. This means that there is going to be quite a lot of paperwork involved in this kind of a thing. And I understand there was a fiscal note of some $35,000-$36,000 on it. And I question that fiscal note in the event that this amendment does not pass, because I think that processing all of those extra reports that essentially just are a form from the department and a bunch of zeros and somebody's signature serves no purpose. And you'll note that the last sentence of each two of the inserted sections in the amendment saying a non-filing of a report for the reporting period constitutes a zero report for that period. So it will accomplish the reporting function in the same way in which we've already provided for public officials on page 9 of the bill, and I urge the passage of the amendment.
Mr. Parker.
Mr. Speaker, the proposed amendment is like a good news and bad news story. The good news, of course, is that for those who would have nothing to report, there would be a savings of time and paper and trees, I suppose, if we take it all the way down the line. The bad news is that the commission, when they receive no report for that period, won't know whether the person has spent money and failed to file it or spent nothing and then, for that reason, not filed. And so, looking at it from one end of the telescope, from the person upon whom the burden for filing is, it's a nice convenience. From the commission's point of view of enforcement, I think it's going to be a riddle every time a report's not filed.
Any other discussion? Question is, will Amendment Number 1 pass the House? I suppose we just will have roll calls on all of these things. Question is, will Amendment Number 1 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. If any member failed to vote, clerk might close the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk might take the roll.
Yeas, 23 nays, 2 excused.
Amendment has failed to pass the House. Clerk, read the second amendment.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Wallace. Page 15. Line 29. Delete editorial.
Mr. Wallace.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of the amendment.
Objection is noted, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Basically, what this does is take the editorial from the exemption provision. And the reason for this is the fact that I think editorials do influence legislation as much, if not more, than some lobbyists. And I think the fact that in asking them to disclose sources of revenue, we can make a determination as to whether that editorial is a special interest or just a comment on legislation.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Mr. Huntington? House Standing. House, come to order.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, were it not for the constitutional problems I see, I might support Mr. Wallace's amendment, particularly if it were limited to editorials and newspapers and circulation except for 14,000. But under the circumstances, I reluctantly must vote against the amendment.
Would open up an interesting question about papers who run free advertising. It's much different than newspapers. Mr. Wallace.
I don't believe the free advertisement deals with editorials. The item in dealing with the freedom of speech issue Mr. Brown referred to in the Constitution is the amendment would not disallow any freedom of the press. They can still write their editorials and trying to influence legislation. All this does is saying that they must disclose costs.
Any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 2 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. If any member fail to vote, the clerk may close the roll. Any member wish to change their vote? Mr. McKenna. Any other member wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 25 nays, 2 excused.
Clerk, read the next amendment.
Amendment number 3.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we rescind our action and failing to adopt amendment number 1 and call the House.
The House is called. Mr. Norris.
Speaker, may we be at ease? Yes.
Right, to ask the staff to round up any absent members, if there are any.
Speaker, although she's excused.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, although she's excused on official state business, Representative Sullivan is ill. It's our custom, of course, not to excuse him based on the call unless they're in the hospital. I just make this information available to the body, and perhaps Mr. Urien will consider lifting the call after everybody but Mr. Sullivan is here.
House stand at ease. House come to order. Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'll lift the call.
The call is lifted. The motion to rescind our action and failing to adopt amendment number 1 is still before us. Is there any discussion on that motion? Okay. Question before the House, shall the House rescind its action and failing to adopt amendment number 1? Members may proceed to vote. If any member fail to vote, clerk may close the roll. Any member wish to change their vote, but may take the roll.
Yeas, 23 nays, 2 excused.
House has failed to rescind its action. The clerk read the next amendment. Mr. Anderson. Motion before the House to rescind our action and failing to adopt amendment number 2. The members may proceed to vote. If any member failed to vote, the clerk may take the roll. If any member wish to change their vote, the clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 24 nays, 2 excused.
Clerk, read the third amendment.
Amendment number 3 by Anderson and Parker. Page 19. Line 6. After travel, add, and his living.
Mr. Anderson. No objection. Amendment number 3 is adopted. Please have other amendments.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, in the absence of the amendments, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 522 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There are no objections. Committee substitute for House Bill 522 is advanced from second to third reading, placed on final passage. The clerk read the bill for the third and final time.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 522, Judiciary amended by the Judiciary Committee, and act relating to the regulation of lobbying and providing for an effective date.
Bills before you for discussion and debate. Mr. Hackett.
Mr. Speaker, I'm a little bit curious to know why there was no referral to the Finance Committee on this bill, and are there some fiscal ramifications that are so small that they have no relation to the reality, or what's the story on that?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, we have a pretty detailed fiscal note that was prepared by the commission. And their estimate, which I don't think everybody agrees with, is $34,753. And Mr. Parker testified that information given to the State Affairs Committee that the Department of Administration presently has one secretary at one quarter time taking care of this, and we've expanded it. But we don't necessarily feel that it's going to take the $34,000 that they request. It might take some additional funds, but at least that's what they estimate would be the maximum amount of state funding.
Mr. Hackman.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know if Mrs. Hudson was invited down to testify on the bill or not. I talked with her yesterday because going through the bill, it did seem to me as though there was going to be considerable paperwork that that would have to be taken care of. And she presents a somewhat different estimate of what the cost of this bill would be. The bill, of course, would require an office to be established in Juneau. It would also require an expansion of the Anchorage office. And her feeling was that a research analyst and a clerk would have to be added up there. And the cost that she came up with, Mr. Speaker, was $89,590. And she added to that a 10% contingency fee and came up to $98,500. And which is certainly no inconsiderable sum to do something that I think is a somewhat dubious value in the first place. But I think the thing that was really that really got me in talking with Mrs. Hudson, she stated that there are 20 different forms that would have to be designed based on the 124 lobbyists that were reported here last year. And she stated that at least 100 of them would have to file the 5-monthly report. Then the quarterly report, of course, would be on top of that. And just the promulgation of the regulations, Mr. Speaker, again, based on what the commission already went through in the reason that they were originally established, she estimates that $8,533 just to hold the hearings and promulgate the regulations. And it just seems to me as though what we're going through here, the gaming just isn't worth the candle. And I think we are getting some erroneous figures, and certainly I would like to see the bill referred to the Finance Committee. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 522 be referred to the Finance Committee for a hearing then.
Motion before the body, move the bill to the Finance Committee. Is there any discussion? Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what's going on here, but Mr. Hackney or anybody else can call somebody up, but when we have a bill and then we request a fiscal note, we get a 20-page document outlining what the costs are from the commission, and then they tell somebody else on the phone that the 20 pages of information that they submitted to us to cover everything that Mr. Hackney is talking about is erroneous. I wonder what's going on. Maybe that's why we have a problem in this case with the cost of state government, is that people are giving out erroneous figures like this, and then other people are going on. Now, we've, for instance, Mr. Hackney mentioned
promulgating regulations. Well, they gave us figures of five members at $175 each for travel and 10 days per diem at $50 a day for a total of $1,375. And Mr. Hackney, he's gotten another figure from an employee of the commission. And I think we're going to have to go on the 20 pages of information that they submitted to us and not some telephone call from some employee of the commission.
Mr. Hackney may respond.
Mr. Speaker, I think that the very fact that we do have a great dichotomy, if you want to call it that, and the two different presentations here indicates to me that we really don't understand what the ramifications of this bill are. And I suppose that really shouldn't come as any great surprise or shock to this body, since a great deal of the legislation that we've passed we seem to do on that same basis. And then later, when we begin to reap the consequences of these actions, then all of a sudden it's a big deal. And I call to your attention, Mr. Speaker, the workman's comp bill that was passed last year. I don't think anyone had any real idea as to the consequences of that bill until it actually began to be seen. And I suggest that we have the same situation right here.
Speaker, Mrs. Hudson has nothing to do with this. She's just an employee up there. She has, as an employee, she had a right to put whatever, or at least she probably was asked to put whatever information she might have into the commission's estimate of what this bill would cost. But this is absolutely ridiculous for on the basis of a telephone conversation, unless she initiated the conversation, in which case, Mr. Speaker, I begin to wonder where her loyalties lie. But assuming that the telephone conversation was initiated by Mr. Hackney, it's ridiculous for us to be basing things on this floor when we have a pretty substantial and pretty well thought out proposal that came from the commission itself. If we're going to do this, every time we've got a bill up before us, I'll give you names of a few employees call here and there, and we can have, if we want 13 different opinions, we'll call 13 different employees. But the commission has spoken. They've given us an estimate of what they think the cost is. They're the commission that was voted on by this body. If we find that they're not doing their job, it's incumbent upon us to fire them. And as long as we think they're doing a good job, it's incumbent upon us to give them a sense not to come in out of the rain, or else give us good fiscal notes.
Mr. Speckin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would be the first one to want to in any way downplay the knowledge, skill, long tenure of service that Mrs. Hudson has had, and I'm sure that she has indicated that certain costs are what she has, according to indicated by Representative Hackney. My belief that we ought to take a real hard look at those costs, because she certainly should be a very capable person in presenting them.
Mr. Speaker, just to make something very clear, I initiated the telephone conversation with Mrs. Hudson. She did not call me. I was reading through the bill, Mr. Speaker, last evening, and it just seemed to me as though there was just a tremendous amount of paperwork that was going to be involved, and I became curious as to the cost of it. I was not aware of the $34,000 figure that Mr. Gardner mentioned here, nor did I look over the fiscal note that was prepared for the Finance Committee.
Mr. Miller. Mr. Speaker, then the information is properly identified then as a spur of the moment response to Mr. Hackney's telephone call. Thank you.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, it's been so long since I've dealt with dividing by 10 in engineering, I may have lost the decimal point here, but if I figure it out, the fiscal note as given by the commission amounts to approximately 1/200 to 1% of the state budget.
Mr. Parker.
To speak into the general heading of what's going on here, there's somebody's law that we argue over the thousands and let the millions go by. I think it's fair to say that the common denominator for those who would like this bill to be something other than pass the House is not the cost. It's on the merits of the bill, and of course, in the third reading, it's a proper place to bring up whether or not you think the bill has merit. But the subterfuge of what one state employee or another guesses the paperwork would cost, I think it's a sideshow.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, on the question of the cost, I also read the bill last night and felt that I didn't know how much, whether there was a fiscal note or not, but it seemed to me that it would cost quite a bit of money. I don't have any figures except that with the experience that I've had in developing state budgets and so on, I think 34 is awfully low. I would almost guarantee that the bill will not be enforced, the law will not be enforced for that amount of money. Or if that amount of money is spent, then it will not be enforced in a proper manner and in the way in which it was intended to be enforced. Therefore, I think I will support Mr. Hackney's motion that it be sent to Finance Committee for further review.
Motion before the House is to refer the bill to the Finance Committee. Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Speaker. There is, of course, nothing in our rules requiring the bill to go to the Finance Committee unless an appropriations item is bonded. The law does require a fiscal note to attach to the bill before the House takes action on it. We have the fiscal note. And I'll tell you something else, too. But every time you complete the responsibility of any state agency, however slightly, they come in with a pumped-up budget very often reviewed. That's just what they do. And if the bill does go to Finance Committee, a motion that they do not support, the fiscal note is going to come out lower than it is right now.
Mr. Speckin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Speaker, the Finance Chairman is quite right. They come in with a request for a pumped up body, and the whole problem is that they've always gotten it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Question is, the committee substitute for House Bill 522 be referred to the Finance Committee. The member says proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote, question will take the roll. Any member wish to change their vote, but may take the roll.
Twelve yeas, 26 nays, 2 excused.
Motion is failed. The CRA.
Speaker, the way I read this bill, it's possible for a lobbyist to spend up to $1,200 on a public official without reporting it. And that somewhat reminds me of the story that went something like, well, now that I've established what you are, all you have to do is arrive at Christ. It seems to me that if public officials or public prostitutes can be bought for more than $1,200, I don't know, but maybe the sponsors of this bill believe that $1,200 isn't enough. But I happen to believe that if there is a true concern, and if money is influential on public officials, then it appears to me that this whole bill is a farce, and I intend to vote against it.
Mr. Bradley.
Mr. Urien's story reminded me of another story by a guy a couple thousand years ago in which he said, a physician to heal thyself, and I think that's relevant not just for malpractice, but because the physicians haven't healed themselves, and we have to help heal them. But I think the politicians, at least some of them in this room, have tried to heal themselves, and a couple of laws are now in the statutes, conflict of interest in the campaign disclosure stuff, and I think this is the third of that triumvirate of legislation to totally lock up and take care of and place our own ranks. I speak in favor of that.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I'm opposed to the bill. I'm not going to vote for it. I'm not going to belabor it. I'm not going to tilt the windmills on behalf of the lobbyists. I think we have adequate regulations as far as the lobbyists are concerned. I think we should have. I don't consider this bill in that light. 22 pages, which I consider no better than harassment.
notwithstanding what some members may think, lobbyists serve a purpose. It's always been my experience that if you really want to know something about a subject, the person you talk to is a lobbyist. Obviously, you're going to get a slanted view. You're going to get a one-sided version. I think anybody that doesn't recognize that is not much better than an idiot. It seems to me that it's no better than harassment. And if the idea is to protect the citizenry and this body from weak-kneed members being unduly influenced, as far as I'm concerned, anybody that can't uphold their own principles and beliefs in spite of a Bloody Mary and a Reuben sandwich is too weak to be here in the first place. And I think the citizens at home are capable of making that decision. I don't see that much merit in the bill, as far as I'm concerned. It's 22 pages of printed garbage, and I do not intend to vote for it.
Just a couple of observations. First, to Richmond and Pitkin. I couldn't agree with him more on lobbyists. Some of my best friends are lobbyists. Speaker, I think the important thing about this bill is not that, as the representative from Anchorage would have us believe, that it labels some among us as prostitutes for perhaps taking a Reuben sandwich or something. Because this bill actually makes no determination on any matter as what's good and what's bad, whether a legislator should or should not be, you know, accepting anything. What this does is to say it's the public's business to know what's being spent, particularly if it's over $100. That's all. It doesn't say there's anything wrong with a lobbyist spending $101 or $1,001. It just says it's the public's right to know.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is my new image. I'm attempting to talk softly, but to put across a strong point. Well, it appears to me that after additional deliberation as to what the bill does, I've become pretty well convinced the costs are higher than what was originally indicated. But I've also become convinced that it really doesn't address the real issue. And that issue is the pressures that are exerted by groups on members that have accepted amounts of money, albeit they may have been required to be disclosed. But from the ACA is standing out here, or some other union groups implying they're going to be working very hard against you at the polls because you didn't support the tax retirement measure and this sort of thing. This is where the real lobbying effort is. And this is a thing that we really don't address, because, and perhaps it can't be addressed except by each one of us individually as a moral issue. But those are the kind of things that are evil. Additionally, I'd like to say that during the course of discussing this bill, I haven't heard of one confirmed hard evil that's been perpetrated on any legislator or in the legislative hall. And it does remove, in my mind, the prime need for public protection that is supposed to be granted by the measure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Haugen, then Mr. Brown.
I
just heard about
the bill that
the last
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to vote for the bill, but I'm also going to warn the members of the body of a scenario that was presented to me by a lobbyist in discussing the bill. If the bill passes in this form to the other body and it's signed by the governor, you better be awfully careful, because suppose you are very opposed to the position that a lobbyist is taking, and you're down to Veronoff and you're arguing with him about it, and you're not going to change the position, you know. He knows most people really can't be bought in spite of their some of the caricatures that are circulated in that regard, and he argues with you. So nature calls, and you get up to leave the table for a moment, and he leans over and he says, would you like a glass of wine? You say, yeah, sure. You don't even pay much attention to the inquiry. And while you're gone, he orders a bottle of Chateau Lafite Rothschild 1964, and doesn't tell you that. And then he goes ahead and includes in his report the fact that he spent over $100 on you in that particular reporting period. And that could have some effect on the election capability. And the possibility has been pointed out in the Powell's Lounge, so I just thought I'd warn the members of the body about that. But I am going to vote for the bill.
What's your warrant? Mr. Huntington.
Yeah, I happen to be one candidate that no lobbyist has kicked off for dinner or supper or even one drink since I've been running 2 years now. Not that I have nothing against him, and you have nothing against me, you just don't meet, that's all. But you're talking about, it's 22 pages here to tell the public whether he spent $100 on him or not. You know, that's a hell of a lot of work and a hell of a lot of paper just to tell a guy asking if he spent $100 on somebody or not. I just don't see that. It's got to be full of garbage. There's no other way for it. Just common sense will tell you that. And unless this had some real meaning to it, I would back it. But this bill has no meaning to it. It's just another piece of paper, bunch of junk, like I talked about yesterday. I hate to mention it again. But we just too much junk going out of here. And let's have some good legislation that means something to people for change. Cut this stuff out.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
record.
The Speaker, there are, of course, a lot of things in the bill which the time goes on. We're bringing up this, I think, is a good example. A concurrence of a majority of the members of the committee, certainly on any given day, would not be hard to get. Watching the way Mr. Anthony runs his committee, with all the chairman of other committees, legislature, and one before this, I can't imagine a situation where a chairman could not get a majority of the members of the committee to agree to call somebody in to testify, whether he's a paid lobbyist or not. I guess I have to admit I don't really see the problem.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Anderson's question reminded me of something, and I think that from the Judiciary Committee, it was a concern of the committee, and I think we wanted to make sure that it was mentioned on the floor here. There is a provision in the bill, as there is in the present law, saying that if someone only appears before a public meeting of the legislature, for instance, and does not participate in other so-called lobbying activities, that generally they aren't covered in this issue. And Mr. Speaker, that cuts both ways. That helps the people that are mentioned in Mr. Anderson's remarks, who simply want to come here and appear before a committee and all of that, because unless they, they walk the halls or get in an office, private office with a legislator or somebody like that, they need not worry about the bill. But there's also another problem, and this is what is covered, I believe, although I haven't looked for it, in a committee report that was to accompany the bill from the Judiciary Committee. There's an abuse that really, I think, constitutes a violation of existing law as well as a violation of the bill that has occurred on several occasions, and that is the people who are lobbyists, and the people that I'm thinking of now are not even from Alaska. We saw some of them last year, and maybe others have done this too, who are lobbyists will try to get in under the provisions of the existing law or under this law under the pretext of first testifying before a public hearing. Then they feel, or they argue apparently, that once they have then testified before a public hearing, they're fully exempted and they can participate in all of the full panoply of lobbying activities, getting somebody to talk to them in a private office or in a bathroom or in a bar room or a coffee shop or something like that, and all of the things that we normally associate with lobbying. Well, in fact, that's a misinterpretation of present law, and it would be a serious misreading of this bill, and those people can't do that, and I think that that needed to be said on the record in these debates, and that the committee report had to have attention drawn to it. That's all I have, Mr. Speaker. I will vote for the bill.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Hester.
House leaders. House, come to order. We're still under the third reading. Please substitute for House Bill 522. Is there further discussion? Mr. Gardner.
Just one thing further on. We had left out one section that Mr. Brown reported on in regards to the committee report, and it will be covered in a subsequent report concerning the provisions that are. And a lobbyist won't be exempted from reporting just by the fact that he appears in public hearing and lobbies after the public hearing.
Mr. Hertzberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I intend to vote no on the bill. I've also been invited to Powell's luncheon today, and I'd like to do that as soon as possible so I can get in on it.
Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have many friends that are lobbyists that feel that they are. In fact, I have taken some of them off the bench. And in turn, I have accepted food and drink from lobbyists. And this type of so-called influence doesn't bother me in the least because I can get rid of the evidence. But what I don't quite understand is why a lobbyist is so good or so bad that he erased a 22-page bill. This is not understandable to me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Parker.
The speaker just briefly so that won't hold up the cow's luncheon. You know, a lot of these arguments I've heard before, not in the State Affairs Committee or in the Judiciary Committee where this bill went, because people who are getting now didn't come to that. But a couple of years ago when we passed campaign disclosure on this floor, we heard then about the chilling effect, how good people would be frightened or running for office because they would be afraid of the length of the bill and the number of forms. Heard about the waste of trees and paper and even the quality of paper that the bill was written on. Heard about that there really was no abuse, that we were addressing a non-problem and it was simply a waste of time. And all those things now are echoing back to us, said even in some cases by the same people. I wish we'd kept the record then. It would be interesting to see how consistent some of us can be. The point is, of course, that in the lobbying regulation bill, as in campaign disclosure, we're not prohibiting much of anything. Just asking people to disclose what they're already doing. And of course, the people who are interested are the people back home in the district. I guess if there's anyone tourism around here, in the halls or in the lounge or anywhere, it's that when it's campaign time, people who don't have the privilege of living in the district where the capital is located really would be surprised to know a lot of things. Well, because they're illegal or immoral, even improper, just because there are a lot of false conclusions about what goes on in the state legislature. And this bill, along with campaign disclosure, attempts to simply open the book, to tell people in a form that they can appreciate, summarized by a commission that handles the other two disclosure bills. Exactly. Getting money for influence through in the legislature, how much is being spent, taking it, who's refusing it. The $100 figure was taken right out of the campaign disclosure bill. We can know in lobbying, as in contributing to political campaigns in this state. When you get into triple figures with state politicians, you better be when you have that made public. And then, as now, people were forecasting date B. Gloom that the entire system was shut down and it wouldn't work with a bill like that. That we didn't realize what we were doing and that we would live to regret it. And of course, after campaign disclosure became law, you had to stand in line to take credit for that. I remember that in the campaign, a bill had at least 60 sponsors. The point is, briefly, that well, how money and politics mix in the capital. Not sleazy or even surprising, it's simply information that people find interesting and what they know. It's spelled out in the purpose section of this bill. Once the rhetoric dies down and the commission gets into the business, maintain a law, I think we'll have the state government just one step more open. Is, of course, a goal for all of us.
Any other discussion? Question or issue? Committee substitute proposed Rule 222 pass level. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the rule. Any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Austin. Any other member? Clerk may take the rule.
Yes, 10 nays, 2.
No.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent. The roll call on committee substitute for Hill. Rule number 522, you consider the roll call on the effective date clause as well.
There are no objections. The effective date clause adopted. Committee substitute for House Bill number 522.
Across the House. The clerk read the next item on the calendar.